In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Tuesday, November 13th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, looking at something that's come out a little bit later than ACT-IAC had hoped. The intention was to release the Quadrennial Government Technology Review at the Executive Leadership Conference in Williamsburg, Virginia, the end of October. That, of course, didn't happen because of Hurricane Sandy. And these documents coming out today, and three of the people most closely involved with releasing them are in studio with me to talk about them, fresh off their release this morning. We're going to go left to right on your radio dial, as they say in sports. Molly O'Neill, Wendy Henry, and Ann Reed, all here in the studio to talk about these. Ladies, it's great to have you on the program today. Thank you all for coming in. Let's start with Molly, one of the co-chairs of the steering committee of this, and talk about what was the point of putting this set of documents together in the first place.
Well, every 4 years is a great time, and we use the election process as a time of inflection, basically, to say, let's take a look at government technology, and let's figure out where it needs to go in the future. And this is a perfect time to do it around the election cycle. And so the idea was to put it together a series of topic papers to inform either the reelected administration in this case or a new administration in the case that things were to go in a different direction. We started this process about a year ago, actually, and so we didn't know what the outcome was going to be. So the papers are really reflectant upon, and the topics are reflectant upon national challenges, instead of focused on technology, but looking at national challenges that the federal government is facing, right? And they're providing input into how technology can actually help make progress in some of these areas. And so using the election year as an inflection point is a great time to inform those senior leaders on some ideas.
And as another co-chair of this, Molly said you weren't sure what was going to come out. What's your view about what's come out that you're releasing today?
I'm really, really pleased with it. We had over 100 companies that put people into the product. And so there were a lot of fine minds that were engaged. We got about six topics plus a little, was it Lenyap? discussion as well. And it's an overview. Each of the papers has something really substantive to offer, and we can get into that later in the hour.
Sure.
But taken as a whole, I really do think that they show how technology can help change the game and help solve some of the nation's largest problems.
One of the things that we were talking about before we went on the air was the integration of technology into what the agencies do on an ongoing basis. Wendy, one of the things that I'm going to rely on you to tell us about throughout the course of the hour is the STEM piece of this in particular, and that's the workforce part of technology. What is your sense from what you learned from this process of how the agencies are wrapping their arms around that? And because that can go off in a bunch of different directions. That can get into hiring reform and all of these other issues that aren't necessarily technology related.
So at the federal level, many of the agencies do have STEM-focused programs, and there are some that are well ahead of others. NASA runs a very good program at identifying science and technology personnel. What we believe is that the agencies have to use a more common practice, and that they have to look not only for trying to find the areas where they can use that tech, where they can use those skill sets, where those shortages are going to occur, but also how to nurture and grow current staff as well as the pipeline of incoming staff. So USA Jobs focusing on STEM job specifics. And then also maybe internship programs, things along that line.
Now, the Pathways program is one that we hear about a lot. The concept, though, that I hear from people in industry and on the agency level is we're essentially all competing for the same people,
and in many cases to do the same things. And it's not even necessarily because of the industry versus agency component, Molly's EPA competing against some other agency or whatever. It's whether the contractor hires that person to do the job at X agency or whether the agency hires it to do it. What kind of dynamic does that create when it comes to bringing people on board?
So that's an interesting question. The dynamic really creates who can do the best selling job to the technical resource, in my opinion. I think there are some real benefits that can be, you know, espoused in being part of government, and industry is fighting that. Then you get into also who's paying what in salary, because at the end of the day, you know, there certainly is differences or can be differences there.
But one of the things that came out of this paper that I thought was so powerful is a little bit more insight to the national statistics and an understanding. I mean, this isn't just a issue for federal employees and federal. It's a national issue that our nation has not invested enough in the education of people across the board. So if you look at the jobs, just jobs of today, jobs of tomorrow, not just federal jobs, but or federal contractor jobs, but jobs writ large, having that skill set matters. And we are, as a nation, falling behind in our ability to provide people with that skill set relative to other countries.
So they were astounding statistics.
Yeah,
I was going to say, maybe Wendy could tell us some of them, because they're in the report, and they were, all of us were just sort of shocked by it. Even though you read about it, I mean, just hearing them really kind of shows that we're really sort of in crisis mode here.
Yeah, so to your point of there's going to be these jobs and everybody's competing for those jobs,
mm-hmm.
The numbers are actually that STEM jobs are growing 3 times faster than any other job segment today. And in 2018, it's estimated that there's going to be 230,000 jobs that we cannot fill as a nation with adequately trained STEM personnel. And the point that the paper gets to that's really great is that there's a pipeline, right, that feeds that number of people who can solve those job positions. And when we looked at that, the statistics are U.S. ranked 14th in reading, 17th in science, and 25th in mathematics in an international assessment of 15-year-olds. When we looked at who was teaching the students internationally, we looked at 8th graders. And in Japan and Korea, 90% of the 8th graders are taught by STEM-educated teachers. In the United States, that number is only 66%.
So who are the other third that are teaching them here? People that are trained, they're professional teachers rather than professional STEM.
They're not trained in science, mathematics, engineering.
I see.
Or technology.
Okay.
And then we look at how that sort of processes through the pipeline into what's the outcomes. And from an educational perspective, China, 53% of the overall bachelor degrees are in STEM. In Japan, 63% are STEM. And when we look at the United States, it's 33%.
Is this all a motivational thing, though, that we want to try to convince the kids that have the potential to do these jobs well to go into that field? Or is there some other thing there? Are the people that are in these tracks not learning well to be qualified to do these jobs, Wendy, that you're talking about, that are going to be open? Or is it some of all of that? Where are the holes? And you're nodding your head
in
agreement.
I think it's a little bit of all of that. And I think one of the recommendations that the team came forward with is that one thing the federal government can do, because the federal government has sort of a different role in education broadly. The education in our country is largely the responsibility of the states. But one thing the federal government can do is issue a national challenge, much like has been done for physical education and for the health of our children, to do something similar to that, to be the bully pulpit, the spokesperson, to encourage and excite and interest people in careers in these fields.
And I imagine, too, they have the power of the purse. They can incentivize to one degree or another the money that they give to the states for for education. It's a lot of money that they give in grants and various other forms, too. As you look at all of these issues, Molly, we'll wrap up this segment with you. As you look at this, it's the news doesn't sound great. It sounds a little grim. Is there a silver lining somewhere in what you found about STEM?
Well, the interesting thing is when we first started talking about education and STEM, it really was from a discussion around job growth. And we tried to identify the major challenges, and everyone was talking about jobs last year, right? And they continue to talk about it. And we decided our role within the community is there are jobs to be had in this area, right? And so how do we start filling them? And that's why there was so much passion around that. And then as we wrote the papers, right, the other papers, the other around national security and healthcare and the fiscal challenges, right, it's very clear that technology can play a role. So we believe that this is going to just be, you know, huge opportunities there. And so there's a lot of potential there if we can use a lot of different resources, really go towards some of the recommendations in the paper about sort of measuring outcomes on all the money that's being used there. We're not advocating huge amounts of dollars. We're talking about doing different things,
mm-hmm.
Looking, as Ann said, trying a couple different approaches to things. But it's about, you know, putting the broadband out so everyone can have access. It's about using social media to pair up mentors. It's about, you know, the motivation, as you said, some of the things that aren't as technical, but we get people excited to be in these careers, and you gotta, you know, there's a lot to be had.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned fiscal, the challenges in the paper that is part of this collection, and we're going to link those papers up, by the way, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But that's where I want to go next, because that overlays everything that the federal government is doing right now. So we'll talk about that when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, talking about the release today of IACT's 2012 Quadrennial Government Technology Review. Our conversation continues in just a moment.
The Federal IT Challenge is brought to you by VMware. During the show, Anil Carmel, Deputy CTO for the National Nuclear Security Administration at the U.S. Department of Energy, commented,
"Let's take cloud brokerage and break it down into its fundamental parts in the sense that cloud brokerage really is two discrete components. You've got a technical component that really manages the technical relationship between the cloud consumer and the cloud provider. Then you have the business relationship in regards to the contractual components that need to be managed and maintained."
Carmel also adds,
"This broker was written by the government for the government in a modular approach to where capabilities from industry that added value could be modularly plugged into the broker, building out this marketplace of resources that added value to the government."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Life is long and filled with challenges. Navigating these can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be. Hi, this is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has been leading military personnel through difficult times to a more secure future by offering the right products and services at the right time for the best price. Our low-cost life insurance and personal approach allow us to help you plan wisely and feel comfortable that your family will be taken care of. Our unparalleled survivor assistance services will allow your family to take a deep breath and relax, knowing we'll take care of everything. When you choose AFMA, you choose a partner who will provide guidance, simple solutions, and personalized care. Our life insurance policies are available to all members of the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or find us online at AFMA.com today. That's AAFMAA.com.
Are you shopping for insurance in the same place you go to watch cat videos? Don't spend hours trolling the internet looking for cheap dental or vision plans. Call the Government Employees Benefit Association. With GEBA, you'll work with knowledgeable representatives who understand the intricacies of your government benefits and lifestyle. Based on your needs, they can offer government employees, like you, basic and enhanced policies at competitive rates. They offer comprehensive dental plans that give members the freedom to choose a dentist they know and also the ability to roll over up to $1,000 in unused benefits. With GEBA's vision
Vision Plan, members get the advantage of competitive rates with an extensive network of ophthalmologists, optometrists, opticians, and retailers, plus an annual pair of glasses or contact lenses. Open enrollment for dental and vision plans runs from November 12th to December 17th. For more information, visit GIBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126 to speak with a representative today and stop wasting time searching online.
The Postal Service is struggling to keep customers, so it's taking a page out of Coca-Cola's marketing playbook. I'm Emily Kopp. On Wednesday's Federal Drive, the agency's new marketing chief shares her strategy. And we'll have the latest on the unraveling Petraeus sex scandal. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest in studio, key leaders on the ACT-IAC 2012 Quadrennial Government Technology Review, Molly O'Neill, Wendy Henry, and Ann Reed, each here in the studio. And Molly, you mentioned the fiscal situation that the government is in, and one of the papers that you is part of this, I'm calling it a collection. That's probably not the most eloquent term I could use, but you like that? And she
works.
Nodding her head in agreement against. All right. So this collection of work, which is linked up at federalnewsradio.com, one of the titles is Unleashing the Power of IT to Reduce the Budget Deficit. And as I mentioned before, the budget situation overlays everything the government is doing right now. One of the things that we talked about before we went on the air was the idea that a lot of agencies still regard, I think it was Ann, you made this point, a lot of agencies still regard IT as a cost center and not as a potential place to find savings. I want you to address that briefly, and then Ann, I want to kick it to you because that, it was your idea in the first place.
Yeah, so when we looked at this, how could you not, if you think about national challenges, right, for the federal government, how can you not write a paper on sort of the fiscal challenge out there? And so we really dove into this one, and we thought the best way to handle, especially with the ACT-IAC community, which is a bunch of technology folks in government and industry, how can we look at this and figure out how technology can help reduce some of that deficit? And so we really looked at it in a couple of different ways. And what we did was we actually looked at where some really good practices were in government. So we, in looking at studying this area, we looked at what was happening in CMS, what was happening in VA, and what was happening in the IRS for a reason. One was we wanted to see all that work that CMS is doing around data analytics, right? Is that seeing, are they bringing money to the table? Are they recovering money? And can that help draw down and find money that we didn't have? And the answer was yes. And we went to the VA and said, there's been a lot of talk about how you're controlling costs on some of the infrastructure, but also reinvesting into other things, whether it's Blue Button or something like that. And so how can we look at what they're doing to save money? And we looked at that in context with what the CEO Council does in terms of the private sector. And if you were to apply some of those more broadly, what kind of savings would you get? And we looked at the IRS because the IRS, in terms of tax revenue, how can we look at using sort of data and tools to extract some savings and recover some around fraud, waste, and abuse? And these are the biggest areas that we could, as a technology community, say, listen, it's not just if we focus all of our time, just sort of on the back end stuff, let's not forget that if we invest in some of these newer technologies around data analytics, they can have huge savings and actually contribute to deficit reduction in the federal government. And so there's a lot of potential savings that we talk about in this report that's gotten quite a little bit of news.
And when you think about some of the things that Molly just mentioned, and I'm looking at the recommendations in this, we'll talk about them more specifically here in a moment. But let's step back from the report just for a moment to your comment about regarding IT as a cost center. Are you seeing that transforming at all? And what do you think will be a driver to really solidify that transformation of from the people at the tops of agencies stopping thinking about IT as a cost center and thinking about it as an opportunity, as a tool that they can use to reduce costs?
I think as the senior policy officials and senior administrators of the agencies begin to understand that they simply cannot continue to deliver program and deliver the same kind of value in the way they have in the past without making fundamental changes. And there are technology tools out there today, and some coming online soon, that will help them make those changes so that you understand that it's an incredible resource to deliver on the policies, deliver on the programs that may not have been applied, rather than just looking at the budget and saying, okay, how much money are we spending on technology? Golly, that's a lot of money we're spending on technology. The issue isn't the money that we're spending on technology. The issue is the outcomes from the use, the application of that technology to solving the gnarly problems. If you're not getting the outcomes, then yeah, don't spend the money on technology. Put it where it can do some good. Focus on the program outcomes and how technology can help make a difference.
Do you perceive the role of the CIO changing to become kind of a mini CFO at the same time, to be able to demonstrate ROIs and make a case that this isn't the place to cut because here are the outcomes that you'll lose if that's what happens?
Well, clearly, the CIO needs to be joined at the hip with the CFO. I wouldn't presume to try and say they should become a
well, maybe, but maybe however, have elements of that skill set.
However, absolutely, to the extent that particularly in the federal sector, the CFOs and the budget directors are intimately engaged in setting the strategic direction of and helping to support the thinking around the strategic direction of agencies. That's where the CIO needs to play. It'd be part of that strategic thinking, helping folks to understand how the tools that are out there can reshape the way in which we approach the problem.
And Wendy, that's what I think struck me about these recommendations, is these are tools that exist. These are not things that the government has to sit and wait for somebody to create or figure out how to use. You talk about data analytics, increasing productivity through technology. The other recommendation is using it to combat waste, fraud, and abuse. And Molly mentioned some of the success stories agencies already have. So this isn't a real difficult, daunting, years-long challenge. These solutions exist right now, right?
Correct. One of our recommendations was the use of data analytics. And one of the things we saw was that at CMS, they've been able to use data analytics to put out decision support systems that now allow less expensive personnel to be able to answer the same types of questions and do the jobs that more expensive personnel used to do. So there's some places where there's very demonstrable outcomes that data analytics, which are very, available across the board, could be used in agencies. The use of innovative IT and process just to be able to drive blue button. We're talking people want to engage with government on their terms when they can in a mobile wherever they are. And, the VA under the Blue Button program has been able to allow people to take possession of their healthcare records and share them with whomever they want to, whenever they want to. It's been very powerful, but it's all using technology which is mobile, secure, and available to the people.
The reason that I say that is because in the past, when we've come to these kind of mileposts where some potential big challenge exists and we're looking at solutions, the solution sometimes has seemed historically to be ethereal. Well, we have to create this mechanism, or we have to wait for some technology to mature to some point. And this seems like the polar opposite of that. This seems like the stuff's already here and ready to go.
That's what I say. And this kind of aligns with the other paper, which we sort of touched upon. We're touching upon two, actually. One is around the budget, right? The second one is the alignment issue. And if mission folks or CFOs or deputy administrators are to ask certain questions about cost savings or things like that, pairing them up with a CIO who knows what data and tools are available, right, to actually deliver that is really, really important, because, like you say, these solutions exist in pockets, right? So how do we expose them and make people more aware of them so we could take advantage of these things? Marring that, we're losing opportunities or we're delaying something. So you're right. The recommendations are based on real-time things, but they're also based on another factor, which is in order to do real-time things, you had to have the right kind of relationship at the top to make those kind of connections. And the more connections we can make between sort of the mission and technology, The more success we'll have in some of these challenges.
Well, I want to dig into that then when we come back, that the alignment piece of this in addition, because it involves the role of the Chief Information Officer. And Ann, Molly, you and I have talked about this before. And Wendy, I want you to talk about how this kind of all ties together. So we'll do that when we continue our conversation in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, looking at the 2012 Quadrennial Government Technology Review introduced today from ACT IAC. And you can read all six papers in this collection at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. They're linked up there. Our conversation continues in a moment.
We think federal employees deserve a big
extra
thanks for all their hard work. That's why at the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Service Benefit Plan, we've added benefits at no added cost, from free well child care to free immunizations. After all, you've earned them. No wonder more federal employees choose Blue Cross and Blue Shield than any other coverage. To learn more, call 1-800-411-BLUE or visit
extras.fepblue.org.
BYOD, the employee owns the devices, they bring them into work, and then they hook up to the local network. And so this whole movement toward portable devices is actually transforming all of IT. And there are a lot of opportunities there. All the security related to BYOD, bring your own device, a lot of security issues, security policy relating there. Application development for all of these items, it's a very, very big area.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. With no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month for burglary, fire, and medical monitoring, I made the switch to Ackerman Security. Now I'm saving $25 a month. That's over $300 a year. On top of saving money, I feel more safe. Ackerman has one of the few monitoring centers that is both UL and CSAA 5 Diamond certified. So I know the most highly qualified operators are responding to my emergency.
Keeping your family and home safe and secure doesn't have to break the bank. Why wait? Call Ackerman today and get up to 3 months free of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Navy football is moving full speed ahead, and you won't want to miss the last home game of the season at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. Watch the midshipmen as they take on Texas State Saturday, November 17th at 3:30 p.m. Join thousands of boys, girls, and family members at the annual Scout Day. Be sure to get your seats today and make every game day your day in Annapolis. Call 1-800-US-4-NAVY or log on to NavySports.com now. That's Navy and Texas State Saturday, November 17th. Navy football, full speed ahead.
Preteens, teens, and vaccines. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Preteens and teens need vaccines. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Christina Durrell says teens and preteens should get Tdap, which protects against tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, or whooping cough, and a vaccine that protects against meningococcal meningitis. She also says teens, boys and girls, should get the HPV vaccine, which protects against human papillomavirus, which can cause some forms of cancer, notably cervical cancer.
It's important for parents to remember to bring their teens in for a checkup each year and review their vaccination records to see which vaccines are needed.
A study on vaccination is in CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're digging into ACT-IAC's 2012 Quadrennial Government Technology Review. It's a collection of six documents, and you can find them linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Talking about them with me today, Molly O'Neill, Wendy Henry, and Ann Reed, all instrumental in putting this group of papers together. We talked a moment ago about the concept of IT as a source of savings in budgets, and kind of got around to the place where we seem to always go with these conversations when it comes to chief information officers, and that's the role that they hold. You're smiling about that. You love this part of the conversation, don't you, Ann?
I do.
I mean, this is something you're pretty passionate about.
Well, golly, sadly, I came in as a CIO about just after Clinger-Cohen was passed, and Molly picked up the torch well after I had left, and it there is still a lot to be done. There's some sterling examples of people who are in the community today who are very much a part of the conversation about how to carry the mission of their organizations forward. And then there are those who aren't given voice. And I think it is harmful to the outcome of the programs that those agencies have.
What does that mean at the agency level when a leader has ideas and has a vision for where technology can help take the agency, and that person doesn't have the voice that Ann's talking about, Molly?
Yeah, well, that's the issue, right? So you know how sort of hierarchy in government works, and unless someone's really there, then they can – although I will say – let me take a step back. Sometimes you can have the perception of being in reporting to the right folks, but if you can only speak in technology speak, right, or can only speak in infrastructure speak, you lose the respect of the peers anyways. And so one of the things that I know Ann and I, because we're sitting here looking at each other here, have sort of gone back and forth and talked about this in great deal, is the fact that not only do you have to have sort of the role at the right level, right, so you have peers, but then you have to act like a peer, which means that you understand the mission as well as the technology and have enough understanding of everything else so that you're asked to the table. Because a lot of times, you know, you could become a silent voice. You see that in C-suite stuff all the time. And so whether it's in the private sector or in the public sector, you have to have the ability to be at the table in order to have people share in the ideas and whatnot. But you also have to act the role in order to stay up there and to be well thought of and to people to articulate, you know, how technology can help solve a problem.
And Ann, that's kind of what I was alluding to, although I didn't say it nearly as eloquently as Molly did when I made the comment earlier about a CIO becoming kind of a mini CFO, the idea that person, the main job is the CIO, but they speak the language of the other people that they're communicating with, and so they can make they can demonstrate in words, in terms, in lingo that another person understands and deals with every day, exactly the point that they want to make. That's more what I was getting at.
I would absolutely agree with that. I think sometimes there is the focus on the interactions of the C officials, and in my opinion, that is critically important, but not enough. The real impact is made at the undersecretary level, the assistant secretary level, the program director level, the people who actually are responsible for delivering program. And if you can build the bridge into that program community and help them understand what they can do differently to achieve the results, those are the folks who are really motivated to make the necessary changes. And if you can build those bridges, it will have real impact.
So I'm sorry, Francis, one of the things we talked about this morning at the panel was the fact that this whole notion around sort of putting things at the right level and then acting the part is really important for another reason. We talk about the fact you want to, you know, do the alignment for effectiveness and efficiencies. But in today's world, we really need to talk about it from a security standpoint, too. We don't want people going back and doing shadow projects there that really compromise the infrastructure and compromise the way things are done. So that is really, really important. It's becoming even more important, sort of the big change to me, that over the past couple of years, we've been talking about the importance of to promote efficiencies, innovation, effectiveness, and those kind of things. But also, as we're getting more mobile devices and people have, you know, data is a little bit easier to get to, we also have to think about the importance as it relates to security, too. And I think it's one thing that the paper offers. It's a little bit different than what we've seen this before, because we've talked, you know, for many years about the importance, and we keep bringing it up because it is so important.
Mm-hmm. Wendy, when we come back, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, though, I want to walk through each of the recommendations in this real quickly and have you just give me a couple of thoughts about the meat of each one of those. Okay. to wrap this one up. My guest today in studio talking about the release of ACT-IAC's 2012 Quadrennial Government Technology Review, Molly O'Neill, Wendy Henry, and Ann Reed, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Legacy network expense dragging you down? Eliminate the cost and use manpower more efficiently with the JITC-certified IP Gate AC from Cornet Technology. The IP Gate AC increases mission effectiveness by providing a means to bridge serial networks into the IP world. Cornet Technology designs, engineers, and manufactures C4ISR solutions, both custom and COTS, right here in the Washington area. See the IP Gate AC at cornet.com. Cornet Technology, the experts in voice, video, and data communications.
Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Long-term care is expensive, and it's not covered by traditional types of insurance plans. With benefits designed specifically for the federal family, the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Start planning for the future. Take the next step and visit ltcfeds.com today. ltcfeds.com.
The U.S. Postal Service is an agency in transition. Despite consolidation and multiple rounds of buyouts, USPS still has massive debt. Federal News Radio's November Agency of the Month program examines how USPS intends to get back on solid financial footing. In an exclusive interview, Postmaster General Patrick Donahue explains why it's critical Congress pass postal reform legislation. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
The Agriculture Department has helped distribute more than 1 million pounds of food to victims and temporarily eased rules on food stamps. Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services, Kevin Concannon.
In places like New York, for example, we have provided the authority to reissue the portion of benefits that food stamp recipients received for last month on the basis that a number of those households, their food was destroyed.
FederalNewsRadio.com/FederalDrive.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're reviewing the 2012 Quadrennial Government Technology Review, released this morning by ACT-IAC, and three leaders just integral in making this happen. Molly O'Neill, Wendy Henry, and Ann Reed all in studio with me to talk about it. Wendy, I want to ask you just to give us a couple of thoughts as we wrap up the real deep dive into the look at the financial aspect of this. The title of this one is Unleashing the Power of IT to Reduce the Budget Deficit. The three recommendations: accelerate the use of data analytics to identify opportunities to cut costs, invest in technology to increase productivity and reduce costs, and use technology to combat waste, fraud, and abuse. I guess the one of these that hasn't maybe had the most attention yet, although it's had some, is the data analytics piece. This is an area that a lot of agencies are still, they're just starting to understand, but as we talked about earlier, fortunately, the tools for them to do that already exist.
Right. There's a lot of ways that everybody has so much data right now, and trying to be able to consume that data and really get the story out of it is not a new endeavor. A lot of people are doing it. What we were able to find is places where, and let me back up for a minute, because one of the things that we were trying to do when we were looking at this was we looked at the fact that we wanted to reduce the deficit, but we wanted to do it without impacting the mission, which was to protect, to serve the citizens. And so in doing that, you look at agencies like CMS, and they're using analytics. They've actually created the Office of Information Products and Data Analysis. So they've begun to realize that being able to cut out some of the fraud and abuse, be able to serve their people the way they need to, and be able to bring efficiency so that they can reduce costs, they had a ton of data that would allow them to do that. We talk about the pay and chase model, which CMS obviously deals with. Once you pay that fraudulent payment or bad payment out, you have to then go find it and get it back. And that takes more dollars and more time. So they're able to do a lot of that now through the data analytics. The other thing they did was they put together comparative effectiveness research, and then that allowed the right protocol to be applied in the right situation, reducing redo costs just in healthcare. So there's a lot of places where the analytics, if they're taken across different agencies, could point to places not only where costs could be reduced, but better services can be brought to the citizens.
It strikes me that the biggest problem in this area is agencies understanding what they have and being able to think about what they could possibly do with it. It seems a lot of the times in the past, agencies have been very well aware of what they had or what they wanted. And it was a mechanism of how to put that information to work. Now it seems like the problem is more, what do we do with all of this stuff? And, or what could we need to know that this batch of information that we have could help us figure out? Is that?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges. And, you know, I know I've had a lot of conversations over the years with Shelley Metzenbaum, who talks about predictive analytics, right? So, and part of that is really about understanding what questions you're trying to answer. One of the things we were trying to think about a little bit, and I think is in the Capstone paper, just touches upon it. We think about data analytics. If you think about what private industry is doing, you know, with retail and how they're able to cull the data in order to make decisions on ordering or customer buying patterns and things like this. There's just numerous examples about what's happening in the consumer world or in the private sector that we can say, you know, they hadn't thought about some of these questions either, right? But they're trying to improve their business. So now it's really about, you know, getting people to think more about the mission and the outcomes and then posing those questions and figure out, do we have the data to support that? And if we don't, we might not be asking for the right data. And quite frankly, we may have been collecting data that we're not getting the value out of that we thought we had. So mm-hmm. being able to have people skilled and understanding sort of the mission and where you're trying to go and the direction setting is really going to be very, very powerful because we believe that technology is there to serve that kind of information up.
The second recommendation, Wendy, in this set on using IT to reduce budget problems is investing in technology to increase productivity and reduce costs. Now, that sounds like a good idea, but it's one that it seems so far, at least, agency leaders are a little skeptical about, as we talked about earlier, and Ann made the point that this is a cost center in the, still in the view of a lot of agencies. You address that a little bit here about how to turn that around, as we talked about earlier. What's kind of step one and two toward that goal, do you think?
Well, one is looking towards technology that is currently in play today. Bring your own device to work that so many agencies are now tackling is a great example. Increasing productivity, decreasing cost. As we said earlier, the Virginia Blue Button was another instance there where, you know, we're being able to bring existing technology today, put it into play in such a way that you're increasing citizen engagement on the level they want it. So your customer satisfaction is going up, and yet you're reducing costs. You've got a lot of self-service. People want self-service, but self-service is also a very cost-containing type of situation put in place. So I would say that, you know, they need to continue to look at things where they can take technology as it exists today and deploy it across for better engagement.
All right. And the third one here is one that the administration's been on for a while, and that's using technology to combat waste, fraud, and abuse. Is there still some low-hanging fruit here? Are there still opportunities for agencies to get some either money back or savings pretty quickly? Or have those been kind of found and it's going to be a little bit more of a hard scratch?
No, Molly scratched the surface with it. I think, you know, big data, predictive analytics, the ability to very quickly be able to see one thing and then that leads to what's the next question. Being able to then see where the patterns are today allows, as I said a little bit earlier, for us to move from that pay and chase to the verify, which comes out of the data analytics, and then pay. So I think that's where the combat fraud and waste. There's also, it was very interesting, we were talking with the IRS because obviously, you know, they have a large issue with federal tax returns and the checks being paid out before a lot of the supporting information is brought forward. And we were talking with the individual over there And it was curious to think about the fact that really there's no reason for any of us to fill out a tax return. Every piece of information, just about, let's say the majority of it, it is available electronically. And yet trying to bring all of those pieces together, marry them up correctly, and in the time frame that needs to be done is just not being done today. It's not facilitated. And, yes, there's a policy component to that. There would need to be a legislative change as to when certain things are due. But if you as a citizen think about that, that's pretty darn powerful. And it's no new technology. The technology exists today. It's just a matter of bringing all those disparate parts together at the right time to formulate the right answer.
We're already starting to run out of time, and there are two themes that I want to hit before we wrap up. So we'll take a break and come back in just a minute to continue our conversation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM on the 2012 Quadrennial Government Technology Review, released today by ACT-IAC. Back in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Do you hear that? That's a cuttlefish. Ars Raytheon sees it the future of infrared technology. By studying how cephalopods manipulate light, we're driving innovation in IR imaging. With systems that are lighter, use less power, and deliver revolutionary clarity. After all, when your mission is innovation, your inspiration can come from anywhere. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
For a faster, easier way for your agency to go green, choose GSA's Green Aisles, the custom online purchasing channels on GSA Advantage and GSA Global Supply. Each item in the Green Aisles is identified and labeled with environmental indicators like Energy Star, EPEAT, and more, so you can find the green products and services you need and meet all of your agency's sustainability requirements, environmental and economic. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, Bill Bransford will be joined by Miriam Nisbet, Director of the Office of Government Information Services, and Rick Blum from the Sunshine in Government Initiative for an inside look at the new FOIA online.
Hey, federal employees. Choose the plan we believe is altogether better for your health. Kaiser Permanente. Get the inside story on better care. Join a Kaiser Permanente physician for a complimentary Fed webinar, scheduled most Wednesdays through December 5th. Go to kp.org/midatlantic to register for a webinar on Kaiser Permanente federal benefits. That's kp.org/midatlantic. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States, Inc., 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Bring Your Own Device Toolkit, released in September to supplement the CIO Council's digital government strategy, promises to reduce costs, increase program productivity, and improve effectiveness. In order to implement their mobile strategy, agencies must answer a host of security, policy, technical, and legal challenges. Join AFSCIA Bethesda on November 15th at the Bethesda North Marriott as agency leaders discuss the policies, challenges, and best practices of Bring Your Own Device programs. Register today at afsciabethesda.org/novbreakfast.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our conversation today about the 2012 Quadrennial Government Technology Review from ACT-IAC with Molly O'Neill, Wendy Henry, and Ann Reed. And one of the things that I took away from one of the papers in this collection, this one's called Empowering Citizen-Driven Government Through Collaboration and Service Delivery. Ann, I'll direct this to you, is the sense that the point of all of it, kind of a reminder, the point of all of this is not to have successful IT programs in government. The point of it is to serve citizens with whatever the mission of the agency is. Is that something that you think gets lost in the conversations that we have about about different initiatives and types of technology and so on?
Yes, I think often that is true. There are parts of the government now that do focus specifically on how to on citizen outreach, how to be more effective, and that's quite frankly one of the things we wanted to lift up. We think that citizens ought to be able to have the same experience with their government that they have in other parts of their lives. You know, have all of your, what if you had a portal that was yours that you could then tie to Social Security or to the IRS or to your farm subsidies, or I mean, so you've got the MyGov site that you can go to. Technically, that's possible right now. How can we make government more accessible to the citizen? That's one piece. The other piece is how can we allow citizens to participate more fully in the work of government, communicate on a policy basis back into government and help shape thinking. A lot of tools out there to aid in that now.
There are a lot of things involved there, though, with privacy and other issues that are not that make it different than the private sector experience. We're almost out of time. We could do a whole show just on that part of it and would be happy to do so at some point. We just have about a minute left. One of the things that we talked about earlier is the fact that you had over 100 companies involved here. What was the process, Molly, behind the scenes to make sure that when this came out, somebody didn't read it and go, well, I know who it was that wanted to say that because that's what they do?
Right. So I mean, let's just take a step back here. And I said this started about a year ago. And so ACT-IACT, which is a nonprofit educational organization, right, focused on improving government through efficient and innovative application of information technology, right? Well, they set up an Institute for Innovation last year, 2011, to really focus on strategic thinking and leadership on emerging or leading edge things where government could benefit around the thinking. And so that's actually the organization that put out a call for volunteers. First, we got steering committee members. There's 8 of us on the steering committee. And then once the steering committee came out with the potential areas, topics, I think we had 10 to start with, right, of government challenges. We asked the members which ones were the priorities, right? And then once we had those priorities, we went out and asked for volunteers. And what we tried to do is be very deliberate to make sure that, you know, the recommendations were not, like you say, a person or a company's position, but rather they were each paper and topic paper had a group of people that with very eclectic tastes and interests.
There's a whole lot more here included in all of this, ladies, and I would love to continue to cover it. We're completely out of time, but let's continue this conversation either with you or your colleagues at ACT-IACT, because these are all important things, and these are the things that you're dealing with, the people in the agency say they're struggling with the most. So I appreciate you all being here today. It's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you all for doing it. We're going to archive this conversation online at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.